Hello everyone and welcome to Orbital, the Gadgets 360 podcast. Today's episode is being recorded on the 9th of October around 10 PM Indian Standard Time, straight after the Google Pixel launch event. In this event, Google announced not many devices. One of them was the Google Pixel 3, another one was the Google Pixel 3 XL. Now both of these are smartphones. Google also announced the Google Pixel Slate, which is a tablet with obviously a touchscreen that runs Chrome OS, which has now been optimized for touchscreens. It also announced the Google Home Hub, which is basically a Google Home stereo speaker, smart speaker with a screen. So these three devices were launched at the event. Not all of them are coming to India, but the ones that are, we'll be talking about them at the beginning of this episode. Thanks to Games Editor Rishi Albani, who's here.
Sup guys, and yeah, so we know for sure that the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL are coming in. But before we get into that, let's introduce our world-renowned Android expert, sporting a hashtag Team Pixel logo on his Apple
MacBook
MacBook Air.
Yeah, and also Pixel a Team Pixel tattoo in on his heart, ekdam, it's like engraved
so,
there.
Yeah, sup Aditya.
That's Aditya Shenoy.
Hello guys.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Pranay Parab. So, first things first, let's just go straight to the point, unlike what Google did at the event, which is talk about the Google Pixel 3 and the 3 XL.
Well, at least they didn't talk about a robot that disassembles phone and recycling and stuff.
That was like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Last event, 10S, I remember.
Anyway, so the Pixel 3 and the 3 XL are two new phones. From the specification sheet, it doesn't look great, but that's not the point of this phone anyway. For those who are interested, it has a Qualcomm Snapdragon 845 chip, 4GB of RAM, and one of the phones has a 5.5-inch display, and the bigger one has a 6.3-inch display width. So, first of these is, as Rishi mentioned earlier, the notch on the Pixel 3 XL. The Pixel 3 does not have a notch. Essentially, what it has is like a thick bezel at the top and one at the bottom, which houses the two speakers, which are both front-firing. The Pixel 3 XL has a rather deep notch with like two differently sized cameras around the earpiece, and it also has a front-firing speaker at the bottom, which gives it a really thick chin. So behind the times, or are you guys okay with this?
I mean, so here's the thing, right? At the beginning of the year, and actually as late as last year, or when the iPhone 10 was out, there was a lot of outrage around the notch, but it's become normalized for a lot of people because every Android OEM has, well, you know, decided to go with the notch. And I mean, we all saw this coming. The moment we saw it in the Android P files where there is native notch support, we kind of saw this coming. Whether it's a good thing or bad thing, I frankly don't think we're there yet in terms of industrial design, simply because on the iPhone 10, you don't have a chin at the bottom, so that you kind of make up for the lack of space on the top because of that. And secondly, is that it actually works well with the entire OS and the entire hardware because the gestures are pretty fluid. They're super native. They work as they should. Here, it just seems to be like a force fit, but I think we're getting there. I think we're going to reach a point where manufacturers will figure a way how to get their OLEDs to bend as Apple does. And we're probably going to get to a stage where right now, while Android P's gestures, I feel, are a little rough around the edges, they're getting to a point where they could be as responsive.
Yeah. So when the first Android Pi beta rolled out, a lot of people were confused with the gestures because they're like, I'm toggling multitasking for no reason. How do I get to the main menu and stuff? So it is getting better, and also people are getting used to it. So that makes a whole difference here. And as for the notch, I'm not a big fan of the notch on the Pixel 3 XL. It's a little thicker, and the chins on both the phones are a little thicker as well, which is primarily because of the front-firing second speaker at the bottom that adds to the audio quality of the smartphone. So I think that's like you can settle for it.
I think the other thing also to keep in mind is we're not even at a stage where Android P, the install base, isn't as huge as Google would want it to be. So, however, I do see a situation where other OEMs will mimic the gesture functionality onto older devices. In fact, I think that's something Nova Launcher lets you do to a degree, even with their launcher. So I think it's just going to be a point in time where all of this converges, but we're not there yet. It doesn't seem like a holistic implementation in terms of industrial design and software just yet.
Yeah, so what I would have liked to see on this in terms of industrial design is, first of all, a fingerprint sensor embedded in the power button, as we saw on the Pixel Slate. I guess they couldn't do it maybe because of space constraints on the phone and a bunch of other sensors and devices or whatever internal components to be fit there. So that's one thing I would have definitely liked to see. I'm again not a fan of the notch, not a fan of the chin at the bottom on the Pixel 3 XL. And in general, like Pixel 3's design looks a bit dated, even if the phone may perform really well. So I think maybe next week when we see the OnePlus 6T's launch, some of these complaints will be like erased for many people because, you know, they'll probably see what we've already know is a teardrop style notch and a very thin chin at the bottom. But if you look at the back of the phone of the Pixel 3 and the 3 XL, then that's a whole different story altogether, right? I think Aditya, you spent time with the phone.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm glad that they didn't put the fingerprint scanner on the power button, primarily because I've used two other smartphones that have this week. The first one is the Samsung Galaxy J6 Plus and the other is the A7. And I'm not a big fan of it, primarily because if you're holding the phone in your right hand, your thumb naturally is on the fingerprint scanner. Whereas if you're holding it in your left hand, you will have to shuffle the phone around a bit. And you can only hit it with your index finger, which kind of makes it a little harder. And you will also have a smaller contact patch when you're holding it with the left hand. So I'm actually glad that they have still stuck with the fingerprint scanner at the back. It is easily accessible. And I've used both the phones and I absolutely love the size of the Pixel 3. The 3 XL is a little big, but the 3 is about the perfect size. So when you're holding it in your hand, it's got curved sides. The back is completely made out of glass and they have etched on the back so that, you know, you have a different matte finish kind of a thing. In the hand, it feels really nice. And the fingerprint scanner is pretty much where your index finger would naturally rest when you're holding the phone. So that's the one thing that I like about
Pixel 3s. On the topic of fingerprint scanners, what's interesting, and since Pranay brought up the 6T, is that for that phone, it seems to be that the fingerprint scanner is inbuilt to the display. And I think that should be the natural progression, in my opinion, rather than, you know, put it in the power button. Sony even tried it with the power button on one of their earlier Xperia flagships, and that did not work too well.
Yeah. And I would agree with Rishi here that, you know, the in-display fingerprint scanner is the natural progression here. But the in-display fingerprint technology is not ready yet because we've used it on the Vivo X21, with the first in-display fingerprint scanner phone to launch in India. And I can say that most phones with a physical fingerprint scanner are significantly faster in unlocking, like reading the fingerprint and unlocking, than an in-display one. So
So maybe next year.
Yeah, when it becomes faster, I'm all up for it.
Yeah,
probably the Galaxy S10, maybe.
Okay, so another interesting feature on the body is the dual camera setup at the front. So now I think they have used this so that you can take wider angle selfies, and took a dig at the iPhone at the event saying that you can capture 184% more in your selfies or something like that. Which, frankly, I don't think they need to do anymore. I mean, I think they should just stop taking digs at, you know, competitors and do what they do best, which is show your features and move on. And, you know, because some of these, they come back to bite you. Like, I think They made fun of Apple on that. And then later, you know, they removed the headphone jack, as we can see with
I agree with you on this, Pranay, because what they should have done is they should have compared it with a Pixel 2. It's a good camera, but you can say that, you know, okay, hey, this is a wide angle sensor and this will help you get better photos. I remember we were discussing about the LG V40 thing. The first phone with the 5 cameras, and you know, we were discussing that, okay, the wide angle is going to help you take a group selfie easier and not the tallest guy who will have to go ahead and click.
So much of this focused this year on the fact that it has a Visual Core chip embedded in the device itself. That means the camera will be better, and it will also do a lot of these things via machine learning on device.
Yeah. So they introduced the Titan chip, that is what they're calling it, and I was so happy when they said, you know, this is all in device, on device. When it comes to the assistant, all the tasks that it does, even the smart composition that Gmail does, they said that it is going to be on device. Even the smart caller functionality, wherein it will pretty much transcribe what the caller is telling you, that they've mentioned that it will be on device, which means that, you know, okay, the Pixel is fine.
Yeah, so I'll elaborate on some of these things. One is the smart caller feature. I don't know if it's called that. The exact term may be wrong. I'm sorry about that. But what it does is essentially, if a telemarketer calls you, if you don't answer, you can just tap a button on the screen where, like, Google's own voice will sort of start replying to the telemarketer. So all those people who call you saying, do you want stock market tips or advice?
Well, what they're saying is it's like for every caller. But what it'll figure out, it'll transcribe everything for you on the display, and then you can figure out if you want to mark the call as spam, go ahead, take the call forward, or pretty much reject it straight
yeah.
up.
So, you know, this is the kind of thing that sounds cool, but we'll see how well it works in India. Because, you know, in the US, when you're sitting there with your amazingly fast internet, and even when you're 4G, like, it feels like 4G and not like 2G, you know, it's a completely different story. But when it comes to India, a lot of these features may not work as advertised. So we'll see, you know, once we like put the device through its paces, and we'll find out with our full review on gadgets360.com. So another interesting AI thing which was mentioned was regarding the camera. There's a feature called Top Shot. So which of you wants to talk about this?
So Top Shot. So what Google says that the Top Shot is pretty much like it'll keep clicking photos. It'll keep buffering photos when you have the camera app launched. And when you finally hit the shutter button, it'll give you an option, a wide range, right? You know, a couple of milliseconds or seconds before you've clicked the shutter button and a few seconds after it to ensure that you have the right shot that you have in mind. A lot of times, you know, when you go ahead and click a photo, you see the moment you click the button and there's a slight delay wherein you're actually pressing the button and the camera actually goes and records it. So to minimize that delay, it caches all the stuff that the camera sees.
Yeah, and what's interesting with this is the way they've positioned it is it's great for capturing candid moments. It's great for capturing moments in motion. And with that in mind, also what they've said is that you'll need to make sure that if you're using the Pixel 3, Pixel 3 XL, is that in your camera settings, motion is either on or auto. So it's not so if you're one of those who are concerned about privacy, then in that case, you don't want to make sure motion's off until you're actually using it.
Yeah, but that's an entire like big debate out there to be had as well.
Yes.
Because on the one side, you have these guys claiming that's all on device and all. But on the other side, you don't hear any mention of, you know, can you disable this from like sort of, you know, going online and helping Google improve its systems, etc. I don't know if that is possible or not, because that's something that, you know, was not mentioned at the event. And we haven't frankly had the time yet to like go deep into the device's settings to see if it can be done. But knowing that, you know, what Google does and how it makes its money, I would put my bet on, you know, it probably won't be possible. You buy this phone and, you know, you will be helping Google improve its AI by sort of anonymously submitting everything you do on the phone to the whole, you know, big Google AI net that's running in the background. So some of these features they mentioned, I don't think they are like particularly new features in the world of smartphones, because I think we've had live photos for a while now. And a lot of phones, when you click, when you have live photos enabled, what you can do is just hit the edit button and you can like see that, okay, the phone is recommending this as the best shot, etc. Maybe some of the things that Google does are better than what competitors do, but these features have been around for a while. Any other feature on the camera front that you guys want to talk about? That extreme low light thing was an interesting demo, but you know, we haven't tested it yet to see if it works.
So the one other thing that I found interesting was that the portrait mode. So the portrait mode on the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL have been really nice. So they've kind of taken it a step forward, wherein they give you the option to customize the level of depth, because on the earlier models, this is what like Google would give you an output and like deal with it. This is the amount of depth you are adding. So here they give you the option to adjust the level of depth you want in those photos. You can also tap to refocus if you don't want that particular subject in focus and you want to highlight something else. So you can do that. And there's also a color pop function, which will highlight colors. Apart from that, yeah, that is one feature that I would see myself using a lot more.
Yeah.
One other thing also in terms of camera, and this is something that's going to hopefully show up in an update, is basically the low light, or what they showed off on stage in terms of low light, where you essentially can get a better shot without using flash and without getting a grainy image. It's called night sight, but that's only going to come in an update later on for the phone.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point actually, because one of the things I wanted to bring up was Google mentioned that a bunch of these features will be going to older Pixel phones as well, because most of the stuff that they do with the camera, it's, you know, all AI based. So now with the Pixel 3, what you get is on-device processing, because that visual core which was there in Pixel 2 as well has been activated and is now being advertised. But it was, the chip was present, maybe an improved version is there in this phone, but it's not like the chip is new. So if you're getting those features in older phones as well, what is the motivation for people to buy the Pixel 3? Because in our test, at least the Pixel 2 has been performing pretty well even now. So do you guys think there's any reason to pick this up over the previous phones, or you can save some money and get the previous one and get, like, you know, as much of an experience as this one?
I don't know. I think, see, there is still a lot of merit to pick up a Pixel 2. simply because if we go by the last 2 years of Google's Pixel lineup, the first few months are painful. You have issues with the screen, issues with build quality. We've seen that happen with the OG Pixel. We've seen that happen with the Pixel 2. So right now, I think they're in a situation where you can still comfortably buy a Pixel 2 or 2 XL without worrying too much. Most of the issues have been ironed out.
Yeah, I would still say maybe 2 XL is like a bit dicey. Pixel 2 has been pretty solid in terms of like the hardware.
Yes.
Well, when you ask, you know, Pixel 2 or Pixel 3, the first thing that comes to mind is what price. Because if the Pixel 3 is going to launch at 71,000 rupees, it's quite expensive compared to the Pixel 2. The Pixel 2 is a good device, but I'm not very sure of it, primarily because it has that 16:9 aspect ratio. And when you've seen all the other phones with an 18:9, when you go back to that, it feels a little odd. You know, I find myself swiping the screen, trying to get rid of the black extra band, so to say. So the Pixel 2 is good, but when you talk about the Snapdragon 845, the processor is a lot more efficient and powerful than the 835. Efficiency is, I think, the high, like, it's more, way more efficient than the 835. In terms of power, yes, the 845 is powerful as well. But primarily for efficiency, I would say that the 845 would be my pick. And the best advice I can give is probably wait for a sale.
Yeah, like, don't buy it at full price. So I will, for the benefit of our listeners, I'm going to like read out the prices, and this is where the podcast gets a bit funny. The Pixel 3 64GB starts at 71,000 rupees. 128GB Pixel 3 is 80,000. Pixel 3 XL, which is a bigger phone, 64GB starts at 83,000 and 128GB is at 92,000.
The affordable Pixel that everyone was talking about.
I guess it's in the works and maybe not ready yet.
So what we do know from for listeners who are like new to the whole Pixel 3 drama, the pre-release, there's been so many leaks and rumors that it makes your favorite soap opera seem like a very simple story. What we do know right now is apparently, allegedly, there are 7 devices in the works at Google. And apparently the cost effective Pixel is apparently going to not have a notch. Yeah. And it may be made by Xiaomi in collaboration with Xiaomi. But we don't know how true this is because there are 2 hardware teams within Google. Google's own hardware team plus the team they acquired from HTC. And it seems that Google themselves have been leaking a lot of stuff around the Pixel 3. And I mean, there's been also a lot of rumor to suggest that we might see a Pixel 3 Ultra, which might be an even bigger phone without a notch. But again, nothing's come to fruition. So, I mean, all said and done, I think we already have an affordable Pixel. It's called the Android One Project.
Yeah, I would agree with Rishi here. With a lot of other smartphone manufacturers, especially Nokia, which has pretty much the entire lineup enrolled in the Android One program, I think that's the nexus we all wanted.
Yeah, so there are a couple of points that I want to bring up here. Mm-hmm. First is that the 128GB storage option, I suppose it should be higher. 64GB, I don't think the price is that bad when you compare it to other flagships, such as, you know, the iPhone XR, which will launch at 76,900 rupees.
Yeah.
So 71,000, 76,000 is pretty much, you know, thereabouts. If you compare it to the Note, Samsung Note 9, which has like terrific pricing, then yeah, Note is how much?
67,900 is.
Yeah, what, so 67,900. So Note 9 is actually cheaper, which has like a comparable, you know, hardware pretty much.
So the Note 9 is actually the first phone that comes to mind when you talk about the Pixel 3, and it's because it's pretty much what it's the best that Samsung has to offer. Its latest processor, latest software, everything. But when it comes to, say, software support or even the cameras, I have my doubts about the Note 9 beating the Pixel 3. Even if you look at the Galaxy S9s, these devices have still not gotten the Android Pie update. So I don't know if the Note 9 will have the same amount of support that the Pixels have. So if basically you want to have the latest software and you're paying a premium for a phone of, you know, at, like that sort of money, close to 70 grand for a phone, I think the Pixel 3 kind of justifies its higher price point some extent. Yeah.
That's one way of looking at it. That is, if you're craving for stock Android at that price tag, yeah. But the other thing which also you need to keep in mind is if you're looking in terms of pure feature set, even on a lower version of Android, the Note 9 can't be beat that way. Because you have the stylus, which has a lot of cool things. You can take notes. Plus, you know, the entire build quality is in my opinion, in another league. But that's just personal preference at this stage. What is important and what readers and listeners should be worried about is the after sales. because we've seen a very, very spotty history, at least with for the Pixel and Pixel 2 in India. Samsung, on the other hand, has been relatively stable. So that's something users should also keep in mind.
Yes, it's one thing that we see all these keynotes happening in the US and get excited. And this another thing when you get like a subpar experience in India, because a bunch of these features don't work. A bunch of the products announced there don't make it here. So as, you know, people who like gadgets, we do get a bit excited. For example, the Pixel Slate. Now there is, it's a Chrome OS tablet and, you know, it's been announced $599, which is a pretty good price for a, you know, tablet. And the, you know, iPad, like iPad smart keyboard, like Pixel Stand, Slate keyboard.
Yeah,
Pixel Slate keyboard. So that looks very exciting. But, you know, once again, there's no launch date for India. It runs Chrome OS, which means you will always need internet, which means, you know, it's pretty much dead in India because, you know, even when you have like full 4G signal, your internet is worse than 2G. So a lot of these reasons make it completely impractical. No.
But Rishi has a very valid point. After sales support is something very, very important. And like you said, Samsung has got better support. Also, when you're paying that kind of money, Samsung actually prioritizes users of the Samsung Galaxy S9, the S series and the Note series. So they are given priority over every other lineup. And yeah, that is kind of required.
Essentially, bada aadmi hi achhi mehman nawazi.
That's true. But I haven't experienced, Pixel, the after-sales support for that. There's only one instance where a friend said that his device, the Pixel, yeah, OG Pixel, that was picked up from his home. And it took them a while and then it was shipped back. So he got like doorstep service, but I'm not sure if it's still ongoing.
Yeah. So the other thing also is that if you look at how Google's managing their sales in this market, at least, if you compare it to the US, right? In the US, if you bought an OG Pixel or Pixel 2, Google has their own trade-in programs,
yeah,
that give you immediate cashbacks that you can use towards a Pixel 3. But we haven't seen anything of that sort from Google yet. If anything is being done, it's being done by its sellers like Flipkart.
Hmm.
So that's also another thing to keep in mind where, what's the point of, you know, bringing in the device when you don't bring in the required distribution channels and ecosystem around it in terms of how you can pick it up.
Yeah, and more importantly, what's the point of bringing in devices at this price when you can't like back it up with that service? At maybe if I paid 20,000 for this device, I wouldn't be so disappointed if the service wasn't top-notch. But at 70, 80, 90,000, yeah, well, it starts to get disappointing.
And but you don't have even anything like Apple Care Plus for it, right? And that's the other part.
Yeah.
And which is really odd because when you compare it to, you know, a 15, 20 grand Xiaomi, you at least can pay $700-$800 extra to get that extra after sales, which at least, you know, gives you a little more peace of mind. So I don't know. It just seems like, you know, just launch it and take life from there.
Yeah, so I have a few problems with the way the event was structured. So one of them is, as I mentioned earlier, I hate this when like the likes of Samsung and Google start taking digs at Apple or whoever else because, you know, they have better products. Focus on your product. That's one. Second is, I think we mentioned it earlier, 2 years ago, they said, okay, it has a headphone jack. So good. It's so amazing. And then they removed it. Then I think last year they made fun of the notch on the iPhone 10 and saying that we don't have a notch and, you know, whatever, our phone looks XYZ. This year now they have a notch. And I think now they are saying that the single camera setup is good. But I'm pretty sure like in a year or two, they will adopt a dual camera rear setup for the rear as well, even if they use it in a different way. So what I would say is that I would be much happier with this event if they just focus on the product and talk more about it. Because the way they did this event, it was like they just skipped through the entire like process of like how they designed the Pixel, what goes in behind it. It was like just hardly 10 to 15 minutes dedicated for the Pixel 3 and they spent the rest of the 45 minutes talking about other products.
Well, I think the first thing they need to do is like try to control those leaks because it just made this event really boring for me. And I think that is one of the reasons that they even skimmed down the part of the Pixel 3 because a lot of people already knew a lot about it. The notch has got a lot of negative publicity, the big notch on the Pixel 3 XL, and they did not want to showcase it. So even if you see, they did not talk anything about the Pixel 3 XL.
Yeah.
They showed the Pixel 3, they talked about it, they did not even mention
notch. That's becoming a recurring theme for them, I mean, every year. I think last year also, every marketing picture, every big hoarding said Pixel 2 and both the phones were shown in there. So I don't think they like saying the XL word at all. So another thing I didn't like, I sort of thought they would do, but they did not, is some kind of a face unlock mechanism should be highlighted, which I think pretty much every other smartphone manufacturer has done at this point. So I think all of them have pretty much said that face unlock is the tech that is, you know, going to shape the future, apart from that in-display fingerprint scanner. So in those two terms, maybe the hardware could have been better. The Pixel launch timeline is also something that Google needs to look at. If you're launching a phone in October, which is coming after all the major smartphone launches of the year, and when OnePlus is actually launching its like annual hardware refresh phone, which is the T, whether it's the 5T or the 6T, if you're launching it around that time, then it sort of puts you on the back foot already, even if you have the best camera.
Yeah, so I agree with you here, especially on the hardware front, primarily because the Pixel 3 is powered by the Snapdragon 845. And like in a couple of months, probably 3 or 4 months, you'll see, you know, newer Snapdragon processor phones there. And the first phone was the OnePlus 6.
Yeah, the OnePlus 6 was one of the
and
first.
And it's been out for close to 6 months now. Yep. Because, like, you know, because the 60 is coming, so six months
are done
for
the OnePlus. Was it the S9 or the OnePlus 6? Did S9 have an exclusivity over one of these chips? Was
no,
that the A35?
No, that was, that was last year with the A35 and
sorry,
LG.
Sorry, yeah, I was confusing.
Last year between the S8 and the G6.
Yeah. So, with this thing, there's already a six-month delay. And you know that every year you have a new processor, a new flagship processor, which means that you are bringing your phone late to the market. And that is what I think Google should change. They should get the newest processor first, primarily because they are representing Android on this side. So I think they should have the latest processors first. And
Launched like around... Actually, see, I think they're also hamstrung by the fact that Google I.O. happens every year around May. So maybe
launch
they don't...
phones then.
So I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is that they do show Android, the latest version of that at Google I.O. And they need around a month and a half for like developers to beta test it, build apps for that. And they can launch a phone only around like August. And Apple has the best window in September. So you wouldn't want to launch a phone in September because A, it'll clash with Apple.
No, so I would say like launch it before September, a
exactly,
month or two
what,
before
what Note 9 does.
Yes,
did,
so that's like the perfect sweet spot where you do it, and they have devices that compete with the Note 9 or, you know, Samsung phones in that category. So I think it makes sense to take Samsung down,
I
guess.
But going forward, what I would like to see Google doing is launch an affordable Pixel device. Because, come on, I mean, like, everyone knows 80% of the goodness of the Pixel 3 is not on the device. Like, it's all, you know, AI or whatever. Even if, you know, there is a price to pay in terms of privacy, etc., as we've seen with the Google Plus data leak, which led to the shutdown of the service entirely. 80% of the features are on AI, so why not bring it to a device that is cheaper? And when you can get the Snapdragon 845 processor in India, in the Poco F1 for, I mean, I wouldn't say 22,000 because that variant is never in stock. Maybe 25,000-26,000, that variant is easily available. So at that price, if you can get the latest processor, why would anybody pay 71,000? And, you know, you're doing most of the work in the background with your software algorithms, which are available for free for most people via things like Google Photos, Google Search, everywhere Google's algos are there. So you're not used to paying for this kind of a, you know, service. Why would you charge such a big premium when the hardware does not merit it and the software features are something that people expect for free? I can't see them like winning in India based on this strategy.
I don't think the idea is to essentially win in any market. To me, it just seems like, and if you look at the entire event, right, it seems like a play to say that, hey, we're Google, you know, we have search, we have ads, we have this, we have that, but we're also competing with Apple. To me, it just seems like a strategic move to show, you know, their investors, to show their consumers, to show their fans that they have, that they got a finger in every pie. That, in this case, Android pie. But that's all it seems to be. Like, and while I do agree that, yeah, a lot of the software should be brought in to other OEMs. And can you imagine how much greater value you get from something like a OnePlus 6 or even anything from Sony when you have this backing you up? But I'm guessing it'll also have to do with the fact that Google wants to keep it proprietary, because if you look at the bigger picture, the EU has struck Google down on antitrust, has struck Google down on monopoly, on monopolistic tendencies, and has asked them why you forcing OEMs to bundle your apps with Android. It's the same situation Microsoft faced years ago. So I have a it could be linked to that. It could be linked to the fact that they probably can't. For other reasons. And besides, we do know that they already have another OS in the works, Fuchsia. Maybe we could see it happen there. But right now, to me, it just seems like a way to show that, yeah, we can compete with Apple.
Yeah, so that's the strategy that I personally don't agree with. Like, it ends up creating a situation where more influencers and reviewers, bloggers have the Pixel 3 than actual people who have bought the phone in India, if you like price it this way. So I would definitely like to see an affordable Pixel 4, maybe something that has the internals of maybe last gen or something, and then you like tailor it for India. because Google is pretty big on that concept.
So, but then at the end of the day, you still have Android One. You get like 70-80% of the feature set. You lose out on camera.
Yeah.
But then you're still okay.
Literally, that's the only thing you lose out on. Like, the camera is the one thing that differentiates the Pixel device. Like, I wouldn't pick it up for any other reason except for the camera. But, you know, there is also that thing that we've been speaking about for about 5 years now, which is the plateau, right? Like, at what point do you say, okay, this camera is enough for me and I don't want to pay 30,000-40,000 extra for, you know, extra performance or whatever. The Pixel 2's camera is good enough. It's available at a lower price, around 35,000-40,000.
I think the Plateau these devices have pretty much reached saturation. The only thing that a lot of other manufacturers are now trying is to put in different types of camera sensors to, you know, give some variety. Because software-wise, I think the Google Pixels are pretty much there. Hmm. The only thing you can do is with hardware. You can put in a wide-angle camera sensor hardware, which will let you click, a wider field of view instead. But apart from that, yeah, the Pixel 2 XL still clicks like really good photos. So I don't know how are they going to improve these photos. And the biggest change, if at all, like for daylight photographies, I think it's hit. Low light photography is where the next challenge is. That is the only thing I can see when it comes to cameras.
Yeah, and in another 2 or 3 years, we should pretty much hit a saturation point. And then what will happen is, while, you know, maybe Google's cameras will be ahead of the game for a few years, mm-hmm. ultimately other people will figure it out. It's, you know, technology, that is how it works. And, you know, then what is the plan? So I would probably think that, just like, you know, they sell Google Drive and all as a cloud storage service, sell the Google camera AI features as like OEM-based things for other people. So OnePlus can integrate the Google camera by paying Google something like $10 a month per phone or something like that. That's the kind of future that I can see, considering that most of this is happening on the cloud anyway.
Well, if Google can manage that, I think they can stop manufacturing Pixels at that point and just sell this software.
Yeah, but then the other thing also to keep in mind is you also see that differentiation from one OEM to another, right? You have Huawei, who's trying to do their, who stuck three cameras on, I think, the P20. And the results were pretty decent. You have LG with 5 cameras. Like, okay.
So 3 at the back, 2 in the front.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're all trying their different ways to stand out. But then from a plateau standpoint, we're already there, in my opinion.
Yeah. So the only thing I can see from here happening is, first of all, the notch will probably go away in a few years. I mean, I'm being really bold here and calling it out. Because I think we've already seen certain usages of the technology where, like, the screen itself vibrates to sort of give you sound or something.
Yeah.
So the speaker, you know, may be replaced. Ultimately, all these devices, what they want to do is front side, full screen, and the device becomes like wafer thin, you know, so thin that you could probably slice a potato with that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because the only hurdle that they have currently is the selfie camera. Once they figure out where to place the selfie camera, or if they can place it under the display,
yeah,
I think that's pretty much done, because you have an in-display fingerprint scanner.
Yeah.
The earpiece can be at the top, just like on the Oppo F9 Pro or say the V11 Pro.
Mm.
So the speaker right above it, probably on both sides, just so that you have symmetry, thin bezels. And yeah, probably that is how you're going to get to the next smartphone.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know,
only 3 years away.
Yeah, maybe. we'll see how that goes. So still some way from matching DSLRs and what you can do with them. Because what I've seen is that right now what you get with DSLRs in terms of raw photos and how much you can manipulate them and like edit them properly to make them look good, that's still, you know, the benchmark to be reached.
I agree to an extent, primarily because a DSLR will click better photos, but to make the most out of it, you need to have that knowledge to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of people just find it convenient to pick up a phone, and the phones have gotten so much better wherein they can figure out everything for you, and you just have to click the shutter button.
Yeah. So that's pretty much like all we have to say about the Pixel 3. Just quickly, I'll mention the other two devices that were announced at this event. Pixel Slate is completely irrelevant at this point for India because, you know, we don't have a launch date or anything around it. Device as of now is targeted at the US, where I'm pretty sure a bunch of people who are going to college will want to pick up this as their primary laptop, considering that internet actually works there. You know, it's not like a weird, like, hidden jungle situation where there is no towers, even if you are standing right under the tower in India. And the Google Home Hub. And now that's the kind of device that will work very well if you have a bunch of other smart home devices in your house. But once again, the problem with this, something that Amazon is trying to solve, is that how much of it works via, you know, without internet or when there is no electricity. Amazon can't solve the electricity problem, obviously, but yeah. They have done something called local voice control, which essentially means that a bunch of smart home commands, such as lock the door and all that, will work even if there is no internet. So it's not like internet is gone and then your house is unlocked. You have to go and manually do it or something. But you know,
but Google, you can't do it remotely at that point when you have no internet then.
With local voice control, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, because what they've done is they're like building the database now, but they've stored some commands on device. Okay. And others are not. It's only limited to smart home as of now. They're trying to bring it to other things as well. So that's, you know, Google Home Hub sort of integrates a bunch of these smart home devices in your house. And it's like a screen on this thing with apparently good speakers. And apparently the screen is also good. It adjusts the display tone.
I think that looks like a device I'll find in Tony Stark's bedroom.
Yeah,
like, you know, you can control the entire house with that.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think only he can afford all the other devices to pair with it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you think of like the cost that goes into this, and also the fact that you need internet for everything, man, like, we are way too far from a like future where India will have something like this, which is practical.
I think what's going to happen is, I mean, it's similar to what Microsoft does with the Surface, right? It's the flagship, an ideal standard of what you can expect from other computer manufacturers. And, you know, 6 months later, Dell will come up with something that's cheaper, or Lenovo for that matter, something that's cheaper and more practical. So I think that's what we're seeing here as well. I think, yeah, it's, I mean, a little underwhelming. And I think Aditya, to a point, also made sense by saying, yeah, a lot of it was leaked. So, you know, you're not going to care too
find
much.
It interesting also,
and,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, that does have a part to play. But at the same time, I mean, it makes our lives easier also.
Yeah, we didn't have to like scramble around for information and on the last day.
We had
day.
It all before the event began.
Yeah, well, that's the sad state of technology journalism these days.
Games journalism but, too. Yeah. For the Pixel 3, I think the best time to buy it will be when it's on sale, when it's discounted heavily. Because I managed to get a Pixel 2 last year for 39,999 rupees.
40,000. Yeah, just say 40,000.
40,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, last year we saw the discounts happen around December, Jan.
Yes.
And now, see, here's the thing. Last year, also, the Pixels launched earlier. They launched in around October. Here, we're looking at a November 1 release date. So, safe to say, fingers crossed, if history repeats itself, you're looking at a 2 month window before we see
the
any
discounts start coming.
Yes, before it makes sense to pick one up.
Yeah. Yeah, so we will hope that the Pixel holds its price and, you know, does not like get discounted within 2 months, so that the people who bought it on day one don't feel cheated. And I think that's all we have to say in this episode of Orbital, and we will see you with another episode next week. As always, you can email us at podcast@gadgets360.com with your questions, comments, and feedback. And if you are one of those tech-savvy people who use apps to listen to podcasts, rate us on Google Podcasts on your Android phone and Apple Podcasts on your iPhone. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with another episode next week.